land is your land. This land is.
Good evening. Thanks for tuning in. This is Heartstock Radio. And I'm your host, Carol Murphy. And today we have a guest, Macy Solser of Restore Design Build. She's an architect, and in just a moment, she will be with us and tell us all about what she is up to. Remember that you can find us on Facebook. You can also email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. And just a moment, Macy will be with us, and can't wait to share her story. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock, and today with us is Macy Solser of Restore Design Build. Hi, Macy.
Hi, Carol. Nice to chat with you today.
Oh, thank you for being on Heartstock. Can you please give our listeners just a little intro here about yourself and this company that you've started, Restore Design Build?
Yeah, I am an architect out of Billings, Montana, and I've lived in Billings pretty much my whole life. I was born in Sydney, Montana, but raised in Billings. And then I went to architecture school, MSU in Bozeman. I decided in my junior year of high school that architecture seemed to be the right choice for me. So it was a great thing that we had such a wonderful school in our state to attend. So yeah, so decided to be an architect, pretty easy decision for me in a lot of ways. We can talk more about that, I suppose. But my husband and I have a business in Billings right now, as you mentioned, Restore Design Build. And we started our company, I guess, officially in 2015, kind of the end of 2015. And yeah, he's a contractor and I'm a architect, so it seems to be a pretty good fit for us. And when we can, we like to focus on restoration and rehabilitation of old homes, old buildings. We do some camper remodels, really anything old we like to breathe new life into. So whenever we get a chance to do that, that's, you know, the work we have a passion for. But we do really any kind of job, new construction and that sort of thing as well. And when we do new construction, we try to focus on green building methods and sustainable methods that focus on energy efficiency and wise use of materials and water efficiency and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's kind of us in a nutshell.
Exciting. And yeah. You mentioned that when you were in high school, you made this career path decision and that it was an easy choice for you. And I'm always amazed because I've always been, I don't know, myself personally, the experience has always felt more like being pulled in 100 different directions. So I'm wondering, I'm just curious, why was it such an easy decision? And what was it about architecture that drew you?
Well, I think when I was a junior, my dad, who actually was the vice principal of my high school, so that was always really interesting. I guess I just always felt this need to achieve and to do these things because my dad was always around and always there, which was a good thing. But he posed a challenge to me to say, hey, like, if you decide what you want to do, like, your mom and I will get you through school. So what do you want to do? And so I really started to think about it. And I guess I was always really good at math. My dad was a teacher. My mom is a nurse. And so I knew those paths weren't really for me. I was good at math, good at science. But, you know, I also really loved the creative aspect and I loved art and was really inspired by being creative too. So I had a teacher my junior year named Mr. Gray. I decided to take a drafting class and he was just a really cool teacher and questioned me a lot of times about what I wanted to do and said, hey, did you know that MSU in Bozeman has an architecture program? You should start thinking about it. And I thought, man, you know, that's great. I'm really good at math. I could, you know, do that part, but I also really, really love the creative too. So maybe architecture was just this beautiful marriage of the two things. And once I felt that way, I thought, man, that's what I'm going to do. I can be practical, but also, you know, dream and be creative and conceptualize things too. So I don't know. It just kind of was an easy choice, which I sort of felt bad about at the time because a lot of kids I knew, you know, were like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I know I want to go to college, but I don't know what to study. And I guess I just felt like this was what I wanted to do. And it was great that we had such a great school in Bozeman to go to. So yeah, I don't know. It all came together. And I actually remember I tell this story sometimes when I was a kid, I went to the Catholic schools in Billings and we had this really great playground when I was in the second grade. And we'd run out to the playground and everyone would get on the swings or, you know, everyone kind of go off in their groups and do different things. And I would find myself along the edge of the fence. And there was usually like a dirt pile or something that sort of accumulated from all the leaves. And I would start to kind of outline floor plans on the playground. I would take the dirt and create walls and openings for doors. And sometimes the girls on the playground would come play house in these. So that memory kind of came back to me too, as I was making this decision when I was in high school. And so I don't know, there was just certain things like that, that just felt like the right decision, I guess, at the time, and has proved to be a good one. So.
Yeah. And as you were going through your schooling and starting your company, was there a point at which you realized, I really love this? Or was that always with you?
I think in terms of what we do now, that was an evolution of school and travel and then my first couple of jobs. But I think, I don't know, the traveling part of it and seeing the world and seeing historic structures and the way people interacted with them and the way you felt when you went in them, or even an outdoor space. Sometimes it was the plaza or a gathering space or a park that was very highly designed, and I don't know, just felt really special. And I think that just continued to fuel my interest in historic architecture, I guess. I had a really great historic architecture teacher in college as well, that just, I don't know, opened your eyes to different things, and you just start learning and you want to learn more. And so I think that I went into architecture school. It was really hard. First year's really hard. They weed out a lot of people. You apply. And I thought, man, okay, this was really hard. I'm maybe not the most creative or the most conceptual or the most out there person, but I really do like this. And I worked really hard. And I told myself, if I get into second year, then I'm in, and this is my thing. And so I got in and just kind of went full speed ahead. But yeah, I think that coming to the historic part and the restoration and rehabilitation that we like to do now, the journey to that started in college. And then in my first job, we did a lot of rehabilitation projects in downtown Billings that I just always really liked the challenge of and was really inspired by that form of architecture. So
how many people, what percentage of your class did not make it to second year?
Oh my gosh. I want to say we had 300 people like first semester, and then it was probably down to closer to 200 second semester. And once we actually were in second year, I believe there was maybe 60. And then I graduated with, I think, 30. So
you started out with 300 and you ended with 30.
Yeah, pretty much. And some people took longer, like some of my classmates did eventually graduate. It was just like within that 5-year span. Some people took, you know, another semester or another year to complete. So that happened too. And some people got their bachelor degree and went to a different master's program as well. But yeah, that was kind of the the bubble down process for us.
And at what point did you decide that you were drawn to restoration as opposed to really preferring a blank slate and new construction, new projects?
Yeah, I actually was thinking about that today a little bit. And when I was in my second year, I remember most of my projects being projects that ended up being historic in nature. That one of the projects was we had to create a train station in Bozeman at the kind of the existing old train station site. And there was an existing building there. And while most of my classmates had torn the building down and kind of went crazy and did their own really, you know, kind of cool modern train depot, I proposed reusing the buildings that were there and creating new connections and things between kind of the two buildings that were there. So I always really like having that historic piece. It gives me a lot of inspiration, and then trying to tie it in some new elements or some more contemporary architecture. And then another project actually was in Butte. So those people listening from Butte or in Butte or no Butte, at the original mine where there's on the outdoor stage now, that was one of our sites my second year. We had to create a community center, and I reused the pump house and then the other building on site that's now the bathrooms as part of the community center. So I had those kind of as the anchor, created a new gathering space between the two, and then used the headframe space underneath there where the stage is now as kind of an outdoor gathering space. So I don't know. It was just a easy way for me to get inspired, I guess. I feel as though historic structures have a character and a story to tell that either can't be recreated or just isn't readily available in what we create new. So yeah, I guess as far back as then, I've really been intrigued by that. And then my fourth year, I was able to travel abroad and spend a semester in Europe and other parts of actually Africa. We were in Morocco. And so just kind of really got to interact firsthand with a lot of historic structures in Europe, which is really amazing and fascinating. And then, as I mentioned earlier, my first job, we did a lot of rehabilitations of old warehouses in downtown Billings to loft apartments, and just felt like a really good reuse of buildings that needed some love and some new life in them and had more stories to tell. So I guess I'm just really inspired by it. It's easy to find a creative outlet with those existing things.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you start doing business with your husband? Was this a company that you started before you met, or did you initiate the whole idea and concept after you guys got married?
Well, I would say that even as we were dating, we talked about what it would be like to have a business. At the time, I was working for a firm here in Billings, and he was working for a construction company as well in Billings, but we talked about what it might be like. We had a lot of similar interests. He also has a passion for historic buildings. He actually lived in a Yagan mansion in Billings. Yagans are a big family here. They owned a lot of land and had a lot of property and just a very well-known name in Billings and in the area. And so he had owned one of the brothers' mansions on the south side and had done some remodeling to that. And so that's really where he started to learn about the techniques and the things to restore that property. And so, I don't know, we always kind of talked about it as we dated. And I come from a family where work a 9-to-5 job and you know where your paycheck's coming from and all those things. And so being self-employed just sort of, I guess, scared me a little bit more than it scared him. Him and his father had worked together in their own company for a long time before he worked for a contractor here in Billings. And so anyway, there was just a lot of things with that. But yeah, we talked about it. And then I would say right after we got married, we kind of, through a series of events, just started our own company. We didn't totally plan it. It was a little bit of kind of a spur of the moment thing, but definitely something we'd talked about. But yeah, we just were like, well, we're going to just do this. The time is now. We're married. We've been talking about it for a long time. And so we just kind of jumped in. So yeah, I don't know. I just kind of jumped into it. I think that's how most things happen in life. But
to take that
yeah,
leap.
We had talked about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had to take that leap. So, but it's been good. We've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot.
We're going to take a quick music break. And in just a moment, we'll be back with Macy Sulzer. And hopefully we can talk about what it's like being a woman in this predominantly male-oriented industry. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock.
As I went walking, I saw a sign there, and on the sign it said, "No trespassing."
This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Today, we are speaking with a female architect from Billings, and I'm just going to let out a little no longer secret that Macy is bringing her company here to Butte soon. We're with Macy Sulzer of Restore Design Build. What's it like being a woman, Macy, in this industry, architecture, and being an architect? How many women were there in your graduating class?
You know, I was thinking about this today as well, and I think that we were pretty close to half and half, which at the time was pretty, this was 2006 when I graduated, but at the time was pretty rare. It typically was maybe two or three in a, you know, a class of, we kind of separated into two groups, and in the, you know, in a class of say 15 or in a studio of 15, you might have, you know, two, another female or two in your class, but ours was pretty half and half. So I would say that going into the real world of the profession of architecture, I had a bit of a skewed perception because of the way that I was in school. The women in our class were really smart and really good at what they did, and everyone felt pretty equal. And so I don't know if that's just the college environment or, as again, as I said, we were pretty half and half. But yeah, I wasn't completely prepared for what I was entering into in the workforce. And even our professors at the school, we had some really strong, wonderful female professors, both in studio and in our kind of regular required architecture classes like history and that sort of thing. So yeah, I think I kind of entered in a little bit naive, and, you know, graduating at 23 and being in the workforce, there's certain things you just aren't really aware of. You're just happy to have a job and ready to work hard and learn all the things. And so kind of the male dominance in our field has just kind of come more to the forefront recently in the last few years, especially with starting our business, and kind of the impetus for starting our business, part of it was to kind of be in control of what we were doing, both creatively and on kind of the financial side. So I had a skewed perception, I guess, coming out of school, and that might be like.
What was it that you encountered that you hadn't anticipated?
I guess just not being seen as an equal. The people, I guess, who know me might say that I have a bit of a masculine energy. I've always really gotten along with men, never had a problem. Growing up, my dad was, you know, one of my best friends. And so just always been really comfortable, you know, with men and women. I'm a woman, so that's an easy one, but I've just never felt intimidated or anything like that. And so I guess I just, you know, wasn't really prepared to not, I mean, not to say I haven't worked with great people, because I have. I've had wonderful, wonderful mentors in my life that are, you know, men in the profession, but just kind of not being seen as an equal. And at first you kind of don't really pay attention to it, because you're like, oh, I'm new and whatever, or, oh, I'm at a new job, or, oh, I'm at a new place. Like, people, you know, I kind of need to establish myself. But I don't know, at a certain point, there's just this mold that you feel like you need to pour yourself into. I think sometimes as a woman in any situation, it seems, but in a predominantly male workplace, men and women are just different. And so I didn't realize I was trying to fit a mold at first. And then when I started to, and maybe got penalized or maybe got passed over for something because my male counterpart, he was seen as, you know, he needed this more than I did. I can remember missing out on a few jobs because, oh, well, there's a male there and he has a family to take care of and provide for. And somehow that was more important than, you know, the family I had to provide for, or, you know, my livelihood was somehow not seen as important. So I don't know. It's a tricky thing. It's a tricky topic, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the workplace is a thing to point out inequality in, because there's data and there's things we can look at that are pretty hard and fast to say, oh yeah, there's a pay gap or there's a disparity here. But I think it's a bigger systemic thing and a systemic question. But yeah, I guess that was some things I just wasn't prepared for. It was, oh, I felt like I proved myself, so now I'm good. But that just kind of wasn't the case. Yeah. If that makes sense.
It does. It does, because it's you know, the voice that you're speaking, and the truth and the reality is repeated by many of the guests that we've had here on Heartstock. So, and, you know, just thinking in my own experience as well, it's not just something that I've encountered from men, but I've encountered it from women as well. So I think, you know, my generation definitely indoctrinated, and at a very young age, that what's most important for women is marriage and child rearing. And you know, if you're lucky enough to have a career, it's just not nearly as important as the same career for your male counterpart. So I think that it's changing for sure. And just talking about it like we are right now, I think, is helping with that. And you work with your husband, and we have had a couple of other guests in the past that were a husband and wife team. So this is always an interesting twist. Do you have any advice for those out there who are working with their spouses? How do you make it work?
Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, it's not for everybody, and that's okay. I think that people sometimes think, oh, that'd be great, or they romanticize the idea. And I think you just have to be really, really real about who you are as people and, you know, how you work together. And I think that for us, we just complement each other really well. I think, as I mentioned earlier, even, you know, when we were friends and then ultimately when we started dating, it was like, oh man, well, you're a builder and I'm an architect. And we got the comment all the time, like, oh, you guys would make such a great team. And I think we resisted that a little bit at first because we're like, well, we need to figure out some other stuff first. But ultimately it makes a lot of sense. And for us, I mentioned I have kind of a masculine energy, and I would say that my husband has a very intuitive nature and a bit more of that feminine energy that allows him to connect with people. And he's, you know, a sensitive guy in a great way. And so we're able to sort of play off that. I can kind of be the tough guy when I need to be, and he can kind of bring me down, and vice versa. So I think we complement each other really well. We know each other really well. We're best friends. We like to spend all our time together, and we work really hard. And so for us, it just was like, oh man, if we could work together, then we'd get to be around each other more, because when we were separate, it just seemed like long days apart, and then we'd come home, and this way we're able to spend more of our day together. So that's something that's been really, really great for us. I would also say that we have recently kind of found out what like our love languages are. And there's another test called the Enneagram test. It's sort of out there right now. It's very buzzy and popular, but it gives you a number and lets you know kind of the qualities of that number and how they relate to other numbers. And so I'm a 3, which is an achiever. And my husband is a 9, who's a peacekeeper. So in the Enneagram, those, you know, there's always some conflicts, but for the most part, those two are pretty complementary to each other there. And just, I think knowing your love language for your partner spills over into work as well, because what's going to work in your personal relationship in terms of, I'm a words of affirmation girl. So in our personal relationship, it's great to hear that. But then in our professional relationship, it's great to kind of get those compliments from my husband as well when he recognizes that I did a good job. So those have been some really key things for us. We also have our own individual responsibilities within our business too. He's out on site, he's handling subcontractors and doing all that. And I'm, you know, handling clients and dealing with design and some of the kind of the day-to-day stuff there. So we each have our own lane, which is really helpful, but then we're also able to kind of prop each other up and ask the good questions to each other and without overstepping too far. I probably overstep a little more than he does, but I think that helps as well, as we're responsible for half and half of the business. So,
and let's talk about you coming to Butte. When did you first entertain that idea, and you know, why Butte?
Well, I think we've been talking about it for, gosh, as long as I can kind of remember. I think Mike and I together, I'd been to Butte a few times, as I mentioned earlier. I did a project my second year in architecture school, so we spent a lot of time in Butte during the course of that project with site visits and stuff. But the first time we ever went, he had never been. And other than he did tell me that He took his SATs, I believe, at the Finland Hotel. I'm not sure why, but when he was in high school, that was like a place to take them. And he lived in a really small town, so he had to go to a larger town to take it. So other than that, he hadn't really been to Butte. So we went one St. Patrick's Day, probably about, 8 years ago, for the first time. And I don't know, we had a great time at St. Patrick's Day, but we were geeking out over all the buildings and all the stuff and the energy that we felt there and the people that we met. And that's kind of when those conversations started for us. And I would say we got real serious about it. We actually purchased a building 2 years ago in Uptown. And that's when we really were like, okay, we're doing this. We're buying this building. We're going to move here. We're going to relocate here. And in the years leading up to that, we just made a lot of good friends. We love the spirit of the community. Everyone's just willing to help us or willing to put us in touch with people and connect us with those that are going to, you know, get us there and be our friends or be our advocates. So,
yeah. And we cannot wait for you to be here. And unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. So for all of us who are awaiting your arrival, in the meantime, how might we find you and contact you?
Sure. We are on Facebook and Instagram. You can look for restore.designbuild on Instagram and kind of search Restore Design Build on Facebook, and all our contact info is there. And we're also working on a new website, so we'll be putting that out into the world soon, so that'll be another way to showcase our work. So stay tuned for that, I guess.
Can't wait to learn more, and for you guys to be here. There's
Thank
so
you.
Much going on, and I think it's perfect timing. Thank you, Macy, for being our guest and for loving Butte too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. We shall see you next week. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
That's right.